You could be listening to any other station in the world right now, but you chose the home of Dave's Gone By, AM 1240 WGBB Freeport. Why? I thought you knew.
There goes the neighborhood!
The guy David Lefkowitz is here. He's a Long Island arts guy. He's got his own radio show.
Greetings from Long Island, where every highway is a sunrise. It's time for Dave's Gone By, an hour of comedy, talk, and music brought to you by Total Theater, with your host, Dave Lefkowitz. You've never heard anything like it, so sit back, relax, squeal if you must. Here's the host of Dave's Gone By, Dave!
Tropical hot dog night! I see flamingos in a fruit fight! Every color of day, twirling around at night.
Well, there goes the Daverhood. Welcome, everyone. Welcome, and welcome back. To me, anyway. I'm saying welcome back to myself, because I've been gone for a few weeks from these hallowed halls of WGBB Radio. I'm Dave Lefkowitz, and I do a little show here called Dave's Gone By. I've been doing it since October of 2002, and we've done 308 of these little babies, and we're doing the 309th tonight. It's called L.A. Express, because while I was gone from here, I was spent nearly 2 weeks having the absolute time of my life in Los Angeles. I'm going to tell you a little bit about that, not just so much to say, ooh, look at me and look at all the wonderful things I did, but just to throw some things out there about the future of the kind of thing that I do and my fellow critics and colleagues and writers and journalists and radio people do and perhaps should be doing. So stick around for that. I know that sounds drab and kind of dry, but hopefully I'll be able to moisten it for you. And speaking of moist, let us not forget my wonderful my guest co-host, and he's been guest co-host on this show for two pretty much straight years. He's here almost every week. He is a general bon vivant and man about town, and his name is Jeff Goodman. Hello, Jeff Goodman. Is that your bon vivant noise?
No.
What is that noise, then?
That was a burp.
Was that a real burp, or were you faking it? No, you're faking. No, you're trying.
Faking.
No. Why are you burping for us this
evening? Oh, because I just remembered how much you like the burps.
I do love the burps, but they have to be on point. It's sort of...
Okay.
That's it. Raising the class. Save those, though, for now, and also after our special guest. We do have a special guest on this episode of Dave's Gone By, and a very classy, internationally acclaimed singer and actress. So we're not going to be burping in front of or for her. We're going to actually be lauding and celebrating her. She is the quite talented and quite unique Uta Lemper. Probably a name you've all heard, or maybe you've seen her on Broadway in Chicago, or maybe you've gotten one of her CDs over the years, or seen her on YouTube, or all the different places. She's also done some acting work as well. Uta Lemper.
How about films?
They
might have seen her in films.
Let me see. Let me check her bio. Perhaps you have. Did I say movies?
No.
I thought I said movies. Oh, well.
Has she done television? In America?
Probably. I don't have her whole bio here. I should have looked at it more closely.
Well, we can ask her.
Yes, exactly. But the main thing that she's known for is theater. She's won a bunch of awards. I'll get in. You know what? Let's get to that when we get to her.
When we get to Uta.
Let's also just do our sponsors so we can get those out of the way and then get to the meat of the show. And speaking of meat, one of our sponsors is the delicious, the yummy, the fantastic Woodrow Deli, which is located in the Peninsula Shopping Center of Hewlett in Long Island, this wonderful little town where I guess most of the people listening live, unless you're listening on the net. The Woodrow Deli has been around since, I believe, the 1970s, and it has absolutely delicious, fresh, kosher cold cuts, sandwiches, chicken dishes, all main entree kinds of dishes, plus all the wonderful sides like knishes and hot dogs and what else?
Hot dogs on the side?
Well, you can have a hot dog. It's not like a main meal. It's not like you're ordering their amazing Romanian tenderloin, or you're not ordering their Polynesian chicken or their Hawaiian chicken, or you're not...
And all that's kosher?
It's all kosher parv, all that good stuff. Although, I don't want to confuse people. I want people to know that you can go to the Woodrow all 7 days of the week. They're open Friday nights, they're open all day Saturday, they're kosher, but, you know, they're not weird about it. Right. They don't go overboard with it. So, that may be Uga calling as we speak. So, let me, Jeff, why don't you do some of our other sponsors for Dave's Gone By?
Okay, I could talk about the Minuteman Press.
Please do. You live Minuteman Press.
They are the copy kings of Broadway, and if you go in and tell them you've listened to Dave Gone By, you get 10% off. And that's quite a deal, especially with their new color copier. Then they're on Broadway in Hewlett Minuteman Press, the copy kings of Broadway. And then we have Dave's little ditty paper there, the Performing Arts Insider, which is all about theater, everything you'll ever want to know about theater. They are the Encyclopedia Britannica of theater. I'm talking about the Performing Arts Insider.
Okay, great. And did we get to Fancy Schmancy Balloons?
No, we never do.
What's the phone number on that?
516-797-3229.
516-797-3229. Fancy Schmancy Balloons, which you own and operate, and which does amazing work for parties. You make balloon archways and centerpieces. You make a party look like a party.
Yes.
What's your logo? What's your
Don't
motto?
You deserve a fancy schmancy party?
Don't you deserve a fancy schmancy party? Okay, cool. We got those sponsors out of the way. Just want to tell everybody to go to davesgoneby.org for all the information about this show. Also, our archives, literally dozens and dozens of shows are there free to listen to anytime. Just going to davesgoneby.org and all sorts of stuff there. So please check that out. Running through these real quick because we want to do one or two commercials and then play a song by our special guest, Uta Lemper, and then talk to her for a few minutes.
Yay.
So yay, cool. Everybody stick around. It's this great, brand new May 3rd episode of Dave's Gone By. Do not, under any circumstances whatsoever,
leave
go
the
away.
Neighborhood.
The neighborhood. Okay, so your business proposal has been typed, proofread, photoshopped, and given a nice cover. Now, all you need is 20 spiral-bound copies, plus 1,000 printings of your latest brochure. Your Xerox can't do it. Your mailroom can't do it. Hewlett Minuteman Press can do it all. Your one-stop printing shop, Minuteman, 1315 Broadway in Hewlett. Open 6 days a week, 10% off for Dave's Gone By listeners. Family-owned Minuteman, their service can't be duplicated. Shalom, damn it! This is Rabbi Saul Solomon asking you, what are the two most beautiful words in the English language? That's right, kosher deli! Actually, kosher isn't English per se, and delicatessen's from the German, but screw that! Kosher deli, pastrami, corned beef, roast beef, tongue, brisket! If you have a good kosher deli, you're set! Well, I have a great kosher deli, the Woodrow, in the Peninsula Shopping Center of Hewlett, Long Island. Open 7 days, even Shabbos. Everything freshly made in the store, available for catering and private parties. The Woodrow, 516-791-4033. 791-4033. The Woodrow, words cannot express.
Sitting there across the bar, your face is somber like a beetle in a jar. Could hear you sigh across the room, your mind flies high. And when I zoom in your heart, I see you're aching in your solitude. You need some love to break that mood, some kindness and a gentle hand to let go of all. Why don't you come along and stay with me tonight? mention your past and your history. Let's talk about now and the future as last. Just want some proximity with you at last. Keep your secrets, I'll let you guess mine. Don't tell me your names, I won't tell you mine. Just want some proximity.
Let me tell you all that we got here tonight on Dave's Gone By. We got, well, me, I'm Dave Lefkowitz, but I'm here every Sunday night for Dave's Gone By. We've got my guest co-host, Jeff Goodman. We've got some really cool new music from an artist named Uta Lemper, who is an internationally known singer and now a songwriter as well as an actress. And we've got Uta Lemper on the phone with us right now. Uta?
Yes.
How are you feeling, by the way?
Well, actually, you know, I'm a little under the weather right now. It's hard with three kids. One of them is always sick, and my little one, my three-year-old, has a super flu this week. Thank God it wasn't the swine flu.
I was going to say,
No, 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 that wasn't the thank God. It was just a cold that it hit me right away into the throat, and this morning I woke up and said, oh, okay, thank God I don't have to sing today, so it hit me a little bit on the vocal cords today. But I guess, you know, it sounds a little rusty and crusty, but not bad.
Actually, not at all. You sound. I mean, I wouldn't know what you normally sound like on the telephone.
A little brighter, I would say.
Ah. So we have a somewhat dimmed Uta Lemper with us, which is
not so. Not you know, my mind is right up there, awake and on flame.
Well, let's see. We'll figure. We'll see. Let's test the flame of Uta Lemper's mind. I'm sure it's actually pretty darn bright. Let's start kind of at the beginning. The thing that may shock people a little bit who think of you as, I guess in quotes, a chanteuse or a Broadway star. I mean, let's also tell the audience that you're the winner of the Molière Award in France for playing Sally Bowles in Cabaret over there. You won an Olivier Award in London for playing Velma in Chicago over there. And in America, you won a 1994 Billboard Magazine Crossover Artist of the Year Award. So not too bad. You know, some nice international stuff going on. What people may not realize is that for all this kind of high-toned modern pop and all the Kurt Weill stuff that you do, musically, you started as a punk rocker.
Well, to tell you the truth, that is actually not true, and this is kind of a rumor which was made up by some journalist who thought it would sound more interesting to call me a punk rocker than a funk rocker. It was actually in the 70s in Germany in those years. I had a rock band, but we did funk music, not punk music.
Oh.
One of you guys twisted this over the years and thought it would be more interesting to imagine me, you know, with a funny hairdo and, you know, pierced whatever I needed to be pierced with. But it wasn't. I loved the great music of the 70s, the funk, the R&B. And,
so did you cover, like, James Brown and people like...
Well, yeah, anything from you know... Al Jarreau to the Earth, Wind & Fire, Joan Armatrading, Joni Mitchell, just the great. It was really. I mean, I was a teenager still, and we just had fun making music and going out at night in the clubs and performing it. And it was, of course, a great and wonderful time in music writing and a great just a wonderful period of music. So it was just for us. Fabulous to just copy that stuff and for me to learn my craft in those years. But it was, you know, the whole thing is a long journey, and if I go back all the way there was a lot of stuff after it. I mean, definitely for me as a young person in Germany growing up there, trying to find a musical identity, and I did find this later on when I became an actress with the German repertoire of the Weimar Republic, the 20s, the Kurt Weill, Bertolt Brecht, the Berlin cabaret songs, the political satire of those years, that was defining in those years my musical identity somehow. And from there on, then my many years in Berlin, of course, that was a Berlin throughout the years of the Cold War, still a very different Berlin than the Berlin today.
Actually, I do kind of want to break in there because in doing that kind of music from the Weimar era, did you have any kind of difficulty or discomfort from audiences doing that material in Germany, in Austria? Was it sort of like, let's forget everything that happened up until 1946? I mean, it's an ugly question, but...
Well, I mean, this was the music from the pre-war time, and most of the composers were the Jewish composers and those who were exiled by the Nazis, so it was the oppressed music by the Nazis. So this was something definitely worth it to revive and to go back to the pre-war history, because this incredible cultural explosion in the free rolling 20s, you know, those 3 years before the Nazis censored everything, were, you know, shattered. The spirit was shattered and it, you know, everybody left Germany who was, you know, creative in those years. And, it was a strange time. I mean, definitely, there were many questions unanswered in Germany in those years. 70s was absolutely, you know, a time of a vacuum, cultural vacuum, and people did not want to speak about the past. And our generation never got the answers. We were very angry and very numbed at the same time about this, the absence of dialogue about the past. Yet in the 80s, things changed a little bit, and... In 1987, when I recorded my first album, Ute Lemper Sings Kurt Weill, yes, I mean, Weill was not, you know, Weill was appreciated in Germany. The Three Penny Opera would be played in every state theater. Mahagoni Brecht was definitely a classic writer and was read in the schools. But it was not used as a tool to start a dialogue about the past, I would say. But internationally, when I started recording this music and suddenly it was played in all the universities, the German language was re-embraced somehow, and not, you know, the stigma of the Nazi time a little bit was pushed away, out of the way, to rediscover this music. It was interesting that it really was suddenly in the 80s, late 80s, not yet before the fall of the wall, before 89, suddenly the world was ready to talk about this again and to revive this pre-war music.
And why do you think that you personally connect with the works, especially of Kurt Weill, and also maybe it's also that you're so perceived as being connecting with it?
Well, definitely because I guess I am German. I'm German of a post-war generation. It's kind of course, important to hear it in its original language, and to hear the European songbook, the German songbook, you know, traditionally, and the way it was presented, And then those years, I was very young, and it was perfect for me, this repertoire. I felt a lot of sympathy and connection to it. Brecht, in those years, he wrote almost like an activist, like a politician, like a philosopher. It was about, the rejection of fascism. It was about democracy. It was about corruption. It was about freedom of expression, freedom of sexuality. A lot of taboo areas, which are still taboo areas nowadays somehow, but yet which were lived out in these songs. And I felt great as a young German to sing these songs. It was something to bite your teeth and to feel spiritful about. And mm-hmm. Yes, I mean, you can carry that repertoire somehow into the new millennium. I mean, now that I'm older, I still enjoy very much. It's very entertaining and very, very rich, this repertoire. And it's something which doesn't exist somehow today. So it's wonderful to live in this niche of music and to keep it alive and to reinvent it with new arrangements, to keep it musically contemporary. And yet as a message and as a mission, it still is an everlasting and eternal mission for me to keep this, alive.
Well, keeping the music alive is Uta Lemper, who has a new album out. It's called Between Yesterday and Tomorrow. We heard one. Sorry?
Sorry, I'm just clearing my throat.
Oh, that's an extra track on the Blu-ray version. You can hear Uta clearing her throat live for us. And it's going to be released on May 5th, so it's this week. Congratulations. Available on iTunes and Amazon and all that kind of cool stuff. You can get to it from your website as well, I think, utalemper.com.
Yeah, it's actually, the label is Naxos, and you can get the hard copies, I guess, in Barnes & Noble. And, you know, there's not much record stores anymore nowadays, but
right.
Whoever sells them probably will sell that soon.
So one thing that also may interest people about this record is that most of the songs were either written or co-written by someone named Uta Lemper.
Yes, actually, all of the songs, except the bonus track, are written music and lyrics by me, and I've been doing this for a while. I was inspired by the album I did in the year 2000, which was
Punishing Kiss,
right. Where I was singing the songs of Tom Waits, Elvis Costello, Nick Cave, The Divine Comedy. It was suddenly that I was in a more contemporary area of music, but all those songwriters yet have been inspired somehow by Brecht and Violin de Si and the whole, you know, a tradition of writing more retata ballads, songs which are telling stories about people who go through hell and then survive and somehow have the last laugh and laughter. Definitely the murder ballads by Nick Cave are very much influenced by the by Mac the Knife and the Three Penny Opera murder ballad.
If we end up going long tonight, I'll probably play Little Water Song off Punishing Kiss, because that's a great performance, one of my favorite.
Yeah, it's a great song. And I mean, I was honored that these guys would actually write these songs for me, sent them over on a little cassette. You know, those years, 2000, still some cassettes were there. I remember playing the little cassette by Nick Cave on my cassette recorder, and it was a great collaboration.
Did you ever get to meet him? Or Elvis Costello or Tom Waits?
Yes, I met everyone, yes. Not through, at the time of the recording, but later on, or some of them I had met before.
So what are they like? I'm always curious about this kind of thing. What was it like working musically or just sort of shaking hands with a Nick Cave?
Well, he's a kind of a dark personality.
Mm-hmm.
And, that was a very short meeting we had, and it was the more important was actually the meeting over the phone we had. The vis-a-vis meeting was very short. It was after a concert and very diluted to lots of people around. But the conversation we had over the phone, I was in London, I think he was in Australia, after he had sent the cassette, was really just speaking about the story, how to arrange the song. He gave us suggestions, and it was very interesting. He wanted me to stay true to the story, to not make a compromise to contemporary music, not make a rock version out of it, but stay rather almost classical with it, with a string arrangement, and stay truthful to where I come from. And that was a very wonderful conversation we had. It was really about the music, and just like great, two professionals talk about, you know, making the music as great as possible and the arrangement.
And since we're talking about other folk songs, and I'm definitely going to play that song when we end this conversation. I've literally got the CD in front of me, so we'll play Little Water Song when we've done talking. But meeting Tom Waits, who is probably, who's arguably the greatest living, working songwriter that we have right now. Well, Dylan's still around, obviously, but and so Stephen Sondheim, but he's up there. So what was he like?
Oh, I mean, I just love Tom Waits. He's so odd and so unique. We met after he had a concert in the Beacon Theater here in New York.
Mm-hmm.
The Beacon Theater is right around where I live. I live in on the Upper West Side, and it was great. I mean, he started the show late, 20 minutes late. He came out with a megaphone and started his first song, walking through the audience. And I heard he had a lot of stage fright, but you couldn't see it on stage. He just did his thing, and it was a great setup with the musicians and after. I mean, it was he's totally down to earth, totally unpretentious, and he very much cared about the fact to say that the song he had sent to me, "The Pot You Throw Away," was a collaboration with his wife, Catherine, and he very much enjoys that collaboration and wanted to make sure, you know, she's written on the credits, and he just, you know, is open. He loved the arrangement. It was a very cool arrangement produced by Hal Wilner at the time, but that's you know, this is our old stuff. It was, you know, 9 years ago.
Yeah.
It was just great meeting him, and I just. He worked a lot in Germany too. You know, he did productions of The Black Rider at the Schauspielhaus in Hamburg at the time. Very interested in theater, and he was involved with the German theater community. So I would love to talk about.
Well, I don't mean to push all of what you've done, you know, or go keep going back to the past. Obviously, we want to talk about your new stuff, but I do have one more celebrity/artist question for you, because I didn't realize you had a role in Prêt-à-Porter, the Robert Altman film. I don't know how, unfortunately, I don't recall how large or small your part was, but what was it like being in a Robert Altman film?
Well, that was an extraordinary production. It was 1994 in Paris, and the American name of the movie is Ready to Wear, I guess.
Right. Yeah.
And, I had met him a few times before, and at the time, you know, the movie was pushed further on, postponed a couple of times, and I was supposed to play an agent, a model agent in the movie, and then it was moved ahead, and 9 months later, you know, when the movie started, I said, well, as a matter of fact, I'm pregnant now, so, and when this movie, well, actually, my scenes, well, I was actually 8 months pregnant, so ready to pop, and he said, okay, I'm going to just write you a different part, you're a pregnant model in the movie, and at the end of the movie, you have to come out on the catwalk and naked.
Naked, right.
As the naked, high pregnant wife, and bride. So it was an extraordinary production because every movie star was in it
well, I think Kim Basinger was
Kim
in there.
Kim Basinger and Julia Roberts and Tim Robbins.
You didn't get to see all those people naked, by the way, just in case you're hurrying to your Netflix to put that up. But you do, like, apparently get to see you 8 months pregnant.
Yes.
What was that? I mean, were you nervous or were you just like, you know, you're European? So.
Well, I thought actually I was very beautiful being pregnant. I thought it was extraordinary state of the art to be a pregnant woman. It's just such a wonderful, rich time of life. It goes by so quickly. I mean, I was pregnant with my son, who, by the way, turns 15 next week.
Yay!
And he's 6'1" now, so... you know, I
well, thank God he wasn't 6'1" then. That would have been really painful.
Four
legs walking down the runway.
You know, what I didn't like to show was, you know, my breast in those years, and I had the big bouquet of flowers in front of my breast. But the rest, I thought, was the most beautiful thing, the big belly, and, you know, I had no problem with that whatsoever. So that was not a big deal for me.
And working with Altman, was he crusty? Was he lovable? Was he a majesty type, or was he just sort of a fly on the wall? What was his modus operandi?
He had a big authority. He knew exactly what he was doing. He had, you know, these were big scenes with lots of actors on the set almost like Peter Greenaway, when I worked with Peter Greenaway, did the same way. He just disappeared in his room, but he had, before that, organized like a stage director every single part of the, of an aspect of the scene with multiple parallel actions and very specific. People knew specifically what they needed to do, where to go, and he was just a great visionary, and then he saw the, you know, the room was filled with people, and everyone had exactly their purpose and their direction.
Speaking,
and then he came out at the end, and you know, the camera, there were three or four cameras shooting at the same time, and he then at the end, you know, put it all together as a master.
Wow. Speaking of directing and stage work, I'm kind of wondering how much time and effort you have to put into quote unquote your instrument. At this point, like, not only are you a singer, but if you're in Chicago, you've still got the body, you're a dancer as well. So how much time do you spend, if any, taking vocal lessons or doing warm-ups daily, or how much do you spend on the body doing dance or yoga or whatever else it is you might do to keep yourself up?
Well, on the body, I don't spend that much time anymore. I used to be definitely a dancer, and, you know, for 30 years, I've been, you know, in the ballet classes and keeping the body fit and staying on. But really, what keeps you fit the most is just doing concerts, doing your performances, just being in the routine, being fearless, and feeling like you're in your living room when you're on stage. That means really being as free as you possibly could be as an artist. But of course, that means that you have to have your instrument under total disposition, you know, control is not such a great, but disposition, you know, the instrument has to go there where you want it to go. And nowadays when I do concerts, my instrument, my vocal cords are, and my voice, my projection, my imagination, my improvisation, everything has to be, you know, to my disposition, and so I can just have fun. And that's the main purpose of my concerts, is also to give me fun, to just enjoy it, to these 2 hours at night with my musicians, this ping pong game back and forth, to create situations on stage with, like, where I can get goosebumps myself, where, you know, my hair stands up, my neck, because I'm so excited that something is so truthful, and the stories I tell are so, you know, purposeful and large that everyone in the audience can identify with it. And some of them are very sad, some of them are very entertaining and fun and provocative, but it's a great ride in a concert situation. And you know, I have my record release concerts here in New York in the Poisson Rouge, the club downtown, on the 9th of June, for anyone who wants to you know, see these new songs performed.
It's 158 Bleecker Street, Le Poisson Rouge, the red fish. Quite an interesting name for a place. It's I didn't realize this. It's where the Village Gate used to
That's
be.
Right.
So it's pretty easy to spot. It's right near the West 4th Street subway. June 9th is when you'll be doing the New York kind of album release concert for it.
Yeah.
So, and here's a question for you. That it's a cliche question that is asked of theater people and musicians, I guess, all the time. I wonder if you'll give the very, very typical answer, because it's probably cliche true. But the difference between New York and American audiences and performing for them as opposed to performing in England or in Europe, are they more reserved there, and our New York or American audiences more like yay and much more vocal and vociferous?
Well, first of all, the New York audience has its own identity, and the New York audience is not the mainstream American audience. The New York audience is just absolutely fantastic.
Sure, bugger us up.
I just wherever, you know, it's Lincoln Center, or is it Symphony Space, or is it, you know, the Rose Hall, the new jazz at Lincoln Center, or whether you go to the cabaret clubs from the Carlisle to the Feinstein, or whether you go down to, Joe's Pub, which is my favorite place to perform in the downtown audience, because people are crazy and open and ready to play and ready to go for it. The different setups of audiences, downtown is really the most lively audience, I would say, but highly educated, highly international audience. They speak multiple languages. I can really perform in any language, you know, the French, the German, the Yiddish, the Arabic, the Spanish, the Italian. I mean, people just totally are international here, and it's a wonderful place to take people here in New York on to a European journey. That's what they get with me, of course. It's the European songbook with, yes, excerpts of the American songbook. And then my songbook too, and my life with the many chapters, the many musical chapters, my years in Berlin, my years in London, my years in Paris, with the journey here to New York. So it's a whole journey. A lot of people here can feel the sympathy with my journey because they have taken the same journey somehow from somewhere in the world, from some place in the world, or maybe if it wasn't them, it was the generations of their parents. So I love performing here, but yet, I mean, there's many other territories. The South American audience is great too. I love performing in Buenos Aires, Argentina, in Brazil. It's just unbelievable. People are so out there with their passion and their warmth and their appreciation. The Mediterranean audience are fantastic too. Spain, Greece, Portugal, Italy, and then it gets a little cooler when you get to
Antarctica.
No. When you get to the German, the Holland, the Scandinavian, the French, you know, the Northern French audiences. Not cooler in the way that, but just more intellectual, I would say. They're just more brainy the way they respond. And it's funny, in Germany, they don't want me to do too much of the German stuff. They actually like a lot of the contemporary stuff. The hip stuff. They don't want to dig too much in the history, yet the Mediterraneans want a lot of the German, the old traditional, the nostalgic music. They don't want too much English-speaking repertoire. It's interesting. In London, the London audience, I would say, is about the same. I would definitely do the same show here in New York as I would do in London as a big metropolitan city. And then you can, it all depends. You know, I do a little bit choose here and there what I do in a specific place. Now, I just performed in Turkey, in Istanbul, and I wouldn't do my Yiddish songs there, for example.
Now, wait a minute, why not?
No, but, you know, and I would be careful with my jokes, too, about the first ladies. You know, usually I do political jokes, but, you know, the first lady in Turkey wearing headscarf, I had to be very careful. I was warned before the show not to go too far.
Oh, you should have been gutsy and done some Yiddish songs in Turkey. Go ahead, you know.
Well, you know, I had to pick and choose. There's a lot of stuff I wanted to do, and as a matter of fact, that Yiddish medley I do today, it's a 15-minute medley, so I chose not to do it because there was lots of other stuff I wanted to do.
Okay. Well, next time, when you go back to Turkey, I challenge you, I dare you, to give them a little bit of my Yiddish mama.
But you know, in Israel, I do perform the Arabic stuff. You know, I was a little bit more gutsy there because in Israel, I know people are very open, and it was, interesting to do it there. But I just didn't want to go there,
All right. Now, speaking of where you're going, we're talking with Uta Lemper, and we just have another moment or two with her, and we want to thank her so very, very much, not just for appearing on our show, but braving a cold, on a late Sunday night to talk with us and to be so interesting and fun. But what do you think the journey is going to be for, say, the next 10 years for you? Is it going? Obviously, the concerts will continue, but do you see any other avenues or directions that your life and career may take, personally or professionally?
No, I don't make too many plans. I mean, I enjoy the way I'm, the way it's going, and my ideal in front of me is actually the journey I'm taking. I don't have any thing great in front of me, what I have to achieve. I enjoyed so much recording this album. These songs I have written, they're passages, songs about memories of Berlin, a song about September 11 here, a song about the Middle East, a song about my life and love, and the journey I'm taking with the chapters of my life. Recording it here in Chelsea in Manhattan with my partner, who has a music studio down here. So it's just that's what I want to do, and I enjoy my concerts with my orchestras, and I never say no. Maybe I'll be on Broadway again. I have to see. I don't especially enjoy performing 8 times a week, but I would never say no.
I want to step in there. You mentioned your partner running a studio. Is that a personal life partner, or just a business partner, or a? Because I know you've got 3 kids. I don't know what.
He's. We do everything together. He's the father of my kids.
Oh.
And my, you know, he's the drummer and bass player in my band, and he's my co-producer of my album. And
you're not going to marry him? You're not going to make
it
legal?
And my best friend, no, we don't want to get. We were both married before we met each other about, you know, a long time ago. And the divorce was a tiring and exhausting and a very sad thing. So we didn't need to get married this time. We just live as if we would be married, and we have definitely run a ship through the ocean of life with our three kids and our work and our music and our passion, and, you know, we don't need the paper, but we truly love each other. Yeah. It's a good thing.
what a sweet, glowing way to end the interview. That's lovely. That's great to hear, and it's great to hear you talking to us and singing for us, as promised. See, I was going to play Tango Ballad from Punishing Kiss, because I think that's just such a wonderful duet, Neil Hannon's voice is great. But you talk so much about Little Water Song, and that's such a special number. I'm going to play that one instead. So this is because it's a kind of a creepy song, especially for a midnight on late Sunday night, early Monday morning, as we are here on WGBB Freeport. But gotta hear this song. It's just you know, hang on to something, hold something tight, because it's a little scary here. Yes. The song of this woman. This woman played and sung and acted by the delightful and so talented Uga Lemper. Please get her new album when it's released in three more days. On Tuesday. Between Yesterday and Tomorrow, available in all normal places and abnormal places where you'll get CDs and downloads. And see her on June 9th at Le Poisson Rouge, 158 Bleecker Street, between Sullivan Street and Thompson Street, in the village where the village gate used to be. For more information, go to utalemper.com. That's U-T-E, Lemper, as any normal person would spell Lemper, .com. Uga Lemper, all I can say is thank you so much for being open and delightful, and welcome back to the neighborhood anytime.
Okay, great. Thank you, Dave. It was wonderful talking to you.
You too.
Just take my breath away. Under here, the water flows over my head. I can hear the little fishes under here whispering your most terrible name. Under here, they've given me starfish for eyes. Head is a big red balloon. Under here, your huge hand is heavy on my chest. Aaron, under here, sir, your lovely voice retreats. And yes, you take my breath away. At my hair as it waves.
Give the gift of entertainment to yourself or others by sharing a Dave's Gone By CD. From Reckless Eric to Joe Franklin, Christine Lavin to Uncle Floyd, Dave's Gone By CDs provide hours of laughs, great conversation, and music. CDs are just $10, shipping included, and you can order at our website, davesgoneby.org. Reserve your corner of the Daverhood. Inside Broadway, brought to you by Performing Arts Insider and TotalTheater.com.
Oh, honey, make sweet love to me.
Huh?
Can't you put down that stupid book?
In a minute, dear.
You said that 20 minutes ago. What's so special about marriage, babies, and the end of the world?
Well, it's a collection of plays by radio host Dave Lefkowitz.
Why do you want to read a bunch of plays?
Because they're hilarious.
How'd you even buy that book?
Online at davesgoneby.org. $20. And they've got trade paperbacks for $12.
You would rather read Marriage, Babies, and the End of the World than ride me like a hot stallion?
Well, maybe we can compromise. Wow, I love this book! Oh, and you too, hon.
Mm-hmm, it's time for Inside Broadway. That's quite an interesting lead-in to this segment, which is all about the Broadway theater, and off-Broadway, and off-off, but it's very definitely Broadway-ish this particular week, because this was the end of the Broadway season, how fast it went. May 1st, I think, was the last date that any show could open and still be considered for Tony nominations, which are coming out, I was going to say tomorrow morning, but it's already Monday, so it's this morning. So, really, already a week ago, the whole Broadway season ended, and we've started a new one. And it was quite a flurry, as it usually is, towards the end of the spring season, with a bunch of things opening. Everything from a revival of Friedrich Schiller's Mary Stuart, this epic historical drama, to the three comic plays of the trilogy, The Norman Conquests by Alan Ayckbourn. Or you had the Dolly Parton musical, 9 to 5, opening, as well as a much smaller and darker musical called Next to Normal. And you had revivals of old plays like Accent on Youth by Samson Raphaelson and The Philanthropist, which is a play that goes back even further than that. I'd have to remember who that was. I keep thinking Simon Gray, but it was not. Anyway, all I'm saying is there was just a bunch of stuff in the beginning of the season and at the end of the season, as there usually is, and then some things popping up here and there in between. Pretty good season, if you ask me, and I think we've seen a lot of quality work, especially over the last few weeks. So, first of all, the Tony nominations, as I said, are going to be announced tomorrow, and so here are some of the big questions, the things that everybody's going to be waiting for. I mean, we kind of sort of get the sense of what will and won't be nominated, but it'll be interesting to see, like, for Best Musical, it looked for most of the season that Billy Elliot would have things locked up. It was really good, it's really big, and it's really, really popular. And so didn't seem to have much competition, except what's this pesky fly knocking on the door, the way flies do tend to knock on doors. I gotta watch my metaphors there. 9 to 5, the Dolly Parton show, which got amazingly good reviews. Lots of also going to be probably quite popular with audiences, and got a lot of nominations in, like, the Auto Critic Circle and the Drama Desk as well. Shrek got a lot of nominations too, but I don't hold out much hope for it winning particularly many Tony Awards. But that's going to be an interesting matchup right there. You've also got the big Broadway musical revival category. There were three major musical revivals this season. Jeff, you want to help me out on this? Oops, so let me get your mic up there, yeah?
West Side Story,
mm-hmm.
Guys and Dolls, and Hair.
And Hair. I think Guys and Dolls is the dark horse. I don't think people really cottoned to it the way they did the Guys and Dolls 15 years ago. So
it had Nathan Lane.
and Faith Prince, and it was just sparkly and wonderful. And this one is also good, but it has its problems.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really going to be West Side Story versus Hair.
Yes.
And it seemed like West Side Story would have had it locked up, but Hair, you know, it's the question of whether an almost or virtually perfect old musical that's done quite well is going to take votes, or will it go to a musical that is kind of a mess, but with a great score, and is done
well. It's completely
brilliantly
redone.
Yeah,
Hair is completely reworked. The songs are all in different order. It's there's a book There's, no, you know, that whole story is not the original story. There was no real story from here.
Well, there was always the sense of...
there was just a tale. It was just like a meeting. It was like a group of people talking, but not...
it didn't have a forward motion of this story of right. Claude going right. from indecision to... Well, he's always indecisive, but when he makes a decision, it's kind of the wrong one, perhaps. But it's so... Sometimes, yeah, it's a little too loud, a little too noisy, a little too... For the first 20 minutes, we start to wonder if it's just going to be a song spiel, just a concert. But then once the book kicks in,
yes,
it becomes more special, then you realize it's a really, really good revival.
Oh, it's excellent revival.
And that's the thing. They're making a great revival out of raw material that's sort of all over the place, whereas with West Side Story, it's a good revival of material that's almost bulletproof.
It's kind of interesting that West Side Story took a big chance by taking a lot of the lyrics and a lot of the book, or some of the book, and making it in Spanish.
Not a lot. Two songs. I'm tired of everybody.
Two full songs.
Two big songs, yes. Two important songs, I Feel Pretty and A Boy Like That, are done completely in Spanish. Probably a mistake. I don't think it's a particularly good idea.
No. I thought it was a terrible idea.
Oh, terrible? Why terrible?
I think when people go to the theater in America, they want to hear English. So you understand everything that's going on. Now, the reason why they do things in accents is because they know that these people are really speaking Spanish because they're speaking English with a Spanish accent.
All right.
So, you know.
Yeah, so in other words, we don't need that to suspend disbelief. We don't need to.
Right.
I just feel he's trying to do a little bit more realism, but then why not just have the Spanish people speaking Spanish the whole time, and have subtitles, and then make it really realistic.
Oh, let's make it really realistic and put real bullets in those guns.
Well, no, but, I mean, let's face it. The Spanish population is at some point going to outnumber the non-Hispanic population in this country, so...
But, again, it's not... Well, then just do the whole musical in Spanish.
Well, then that would leave out the people... The Irish kids are not going to be speaking Spanish.
But this is my problem with it. Pick a language and go with it.
Did it bother you? Well, how much of In the Heights is Spanish? I seem to
not much.
Some words in there,
but that's all Spanglish, really.
Uh-huh.
It's words that have gotten into the American
vernacular.
Yeah. Oh, good word. I couldn't think of that.
Thank you. It's kind of like when the old composers throwing Yiddishisms.
Right.
Yiddish. We know what it's a word here and there. We get it.
Right.
But not whole songs. Right.
And don't change it. I mean. I don't know.
Okay, so that bothered you. What bothered me also was that it was a little bit lackluster as far as the dancing and the sets. It was a good production, don't get me wrong, with some terrific leads, but as you can see, you know the way I would vote if I were a Tony voter. I mean, I'd be pulling the plug, pulling the lever for hair.
Well,
or filling in the form, actually, is all
I don't think it's going to be all that close, to tell you the truth.
You think hair is going to take it in the walk?
Yeah. I think hair has so many things going for it. And remember, this is a production that was like in crisis after they lost a couple of their leads.
Yeah,
They thought it wasn't going to come to Broadway at one point, and then they got a whole mess of it.
Oh, because the producer thing, Elizabeth McCann was shepherding it, and then she kind of kicked out, although now she's an associate producer on it. Yeah.
It's really weird. It's had all this backstory where people were expecting, maybe it's not going to be quite the public theater spectacular that was in the park, and it turned out to be even more brilliant on Broadway.
So, we'll see. I think you're right. I think Hair will take it. What about the question of best play? Do you think it'll be Reasons to be Pretty, the Neil LaBute comedy drama, or God of Carnage, the Yasmina Reza comedy?
Boy, well, I think there are a lot of dark horses. I want to see what's nominated, to tell you the truth.
Well, let's think. It could be Impressionism. It could be, I liked it, although it's going to be closing. The critics were not crazy about it, and they're closing it in a week or two. What else? I don't think the George Bush thing that Will Ferrell did counts as a new play.
I think that's a special thing.
Right. So what are the other brand new plays this year?
There were so many, too, and I can't think of them.
Were there?
Oh,
The American Plan, does that count as new? That'll probably get a nomination if that, even though that was 10 years ago at Manhattan Theater Club.
No, I don't know if that. Well, I don't know if they're going to count that as new. Boy, I wish I had a list of shows.
I think you're overestimating the number of actual real new plays this season. I mean, I wish I had my copy of Performing Arts Insider Theater magazine with me, because I would just check right now.
Don't we need that?
I look at the whole list right there, Performing Arts Insider.
But
I think it will come down to Reasons to Be Pretty versus more popular God of Carnage.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's just people love it. They're flocking to it.
Yeah, but I just don't know if they're, you know, the Esmaena Reza is going to work.
She got it for art. That was her big play about however many years ago.
Yeah, but this one also is more draggy.
I think so.
Art.
But audiences are going crazy for it, and the actors are terrific, and the critics loved it.
Mm.
Even critics who I think should have known a little better.
I think critics loved it, but they loved it more for the acting.
Okay, fair enough. The acting is sensational. It really, all four of them are terrific.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of hope Reasons to Be Pretty gets it. I think it's a better play. I think it's got more to it. And I love the fact that the author, Neil LaBute, improved it from when it was off-Broadway. There was all this stuff in the New York Post that was reported, they're cutting it, they don't know what to do with it, they're taking out the intermission like they did with Impressionism, they're bringing back the intermission. Mm-hmm. What they did, maybe they were experimenting during previews and rehearsals.
That's what they're for.
They cut out three monologues that each of the three main characters has.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they did. They cut out about 12 minutes or so worth of monologue time and managed to put all that information into the fabric of the piece instead, which is exactly what a playwright should be doing.
Right.
And it works, and the show is shorter and better because of it. So even for that, I hope Neil LaBute gets recognition for Reasons to Be Pretty. But we will see.
And revival of play is really going to be unbelievable. Well, I'm surprised. A lot of people have knocked out Equus. They completely forgot about Equus.
Equus is not... maybe if it opened later, but even that was not lauded. The lead actor...
Daniel Radcliffe?
Radcliffe. He'll get a Tony nomination, no question. I don't think his...
I thought the impression was pretty good.
What's his name?
What?
The other guy, Dr. Dysart. The large guy from the History Boys.
I didn't like him.
That's a big problem. I mean, if you've got a revival of Equus, and the lead actor is kind of, the second lead, or the co-lead, mm-hmm. you do have a problem.
He is the lead, because he is never off stage.
Yeah, so, no, Equus ain't going to get the play revival. Maybe The Seagull? Good Lord. Critics liked it. Not that
Mary
it was
Stewart?
Bad, but it's the Bloody Seagull. What?
Mary Stewart will get a...
That might be up there. I liked The Philanthropist and Accent on Youth, which both opened very recently. I don't think either of them will get, best revival status.
I think Accent on Youth.
Maybe Joe Turner, even though I have problems with that play.
Oh, yeah, people love that Joe Turner.
Do they really?
Yeah. They.
Who?
Everyone's saying it's the best production of an August Wilson play.
I would disagree to some extent, although it's a very good production. It's certainly not the best August Wilson play.
I know.
Anyway. All right, well, we've got to move on, but here's the other one. Here's the one I'm excited about is lead actors, because I've just seen this week alone three amazing performances. Bill Irwin and Nathan Lane in Waiting for Godot. And I don't need to see Waiting for Godot again, but it was worth it to see it,
mm-hmm.
to watch what they do, and they're both terrific in their own way. I mean, Lane, of course, you're going to expect to be great, but we ought to be expecting Bill Irwin to be great by now. After seeing him in Virginia Woolf and Full Moon.
I think Bill Irwin is phenomenal, especially since he started. He really was a clown.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. But he uses that. The body, even though he's not doing shtick this time, I mean, he does do shtick. He's a clown show. To some extent.
Right.
But it's more vocal. It's more verbal. He's a real actor. He's marvelous. And to see him and then Nathan Lane together, and then in a totally different show, David Hyde Pierce,
mm-hmm.
who I think is also going to be one of those people that I'll say to my kids if I ever have kids, or to someone else's kids if I'm wandering around the playground in a long, dirty overcoat, and I say, you know, way back when I saw David Hyde Pierce on stage in Spamalot and Curtains and this little show called Accent on Youth, and it was so great. You know, the play was good, but he was wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll all look at me and they'll say, what's theater? Can I get it on my eye thing? You know.
Eye thing.
My eye thing. Hey, speaking of sad things like that, of not being understood by the next generation, let's also make sure that we acknowledge a couple of recent passings in the theater. First of all, a real shockeroo this week, especially for you who are a Vegas traveler.
Yeah.
Go for it.
Oh, well, Danny Gans passed away. That was really shocking. I mean, he was, what, 53, 54?
Yeah, he was, let's see, I wrote this down, 52.
52.
Cause unknown.
I know. His wife woke up and went, Danny? And no Danny.
And the first time in his life, no other voices. He was seeing the voice of silence, you know.
Yeah, that's amazingly sad.
Really sad. I mean, talented guy. He did one Broadway show. It's weird. You got a lot of Vegas entertainers who are, I guess, they're famous on Vegas, and then they come into town and they do a Broadway show just to add to their status or something. He really kind of started on Broadway.
Yeah, the Broadway show was kind of his big break.
It was a brilliant move. He got not so great reviews, and he didn't run that long. And the audience just didn't run to it.
I thought he was fantastic.
It was good.
I didn't like his Vegas show. I thought it was very, very bland. It didn't take a stand. It was like, populist.
But it was a brilliant promotional strategy, if you think about it, to go do the Broadway show, get it up there, and say, I played Broadway, and got some decent reviews. And then you come to Vegas as Broadway star Danny
Gans.
And
headlined at the Mirage up until this year.
Yeah, and then he moved to the what? The Entre...
I think he moved to the Wynn.
Oh, maybe. Okay.
Or the Encore.
Encore, that was the one. He moved to the Encore.
The new Wynn property.
Did you know he started as a pro baseball player?
No, had no idea.
Drafted by the Chicago White Sox. I don't know how much pro playing time he got, but he moved from that into doing what he did with the impressions and the voices and the comedy. So it's sad. It's a bit of a loss.
Oh, very much.
Bigger loss, though, the week before. Unfortunately, we weren't here to say a proper farewell to Beatrice Arthur.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I guess the other testicle dropped, as it were. The other...
It's funny, the mother, then the daughter in Golden Girls.
Oh. Well, there are three, yeah, that's true. And they reached the other two by phone, and they were pretty sad about it, because they were pretty close.
And she also has a Tony Award for...
MAME, was it?
Yeah.
And she was in the original Three Penny Opera off-Broadway.
Yes.
And she was in Fiddler on the Roof, Get Out Your Cast Albums with Zero Mostel.
Yeah.
She was the original Yenta the Matchmaker.
Yes, she was.
And, of course, we all know her first from Maud.
And then there's
Maud. Now, I mean, it was actually first on All in the Family playing the character of Maud.
Right.
And Norman Lear saw her, and they got so many phone calls about her appearance, standing up to Archie Bunker, a woman, a modern... liberated woman going toe-to-toe with Archie Bunker in the way that she did. They had to give her a show immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And so they went there, they did Maud, and then she had that third life with the Golden Girls.
Yeah.
Because she just had that way. And apparently, from most reports, that characterization that she had on stage of the ballsy, brassy, I'm all done, a guy will get you, was not like her at all. She was apparently quite shy in real life and fairly self-effacing. So, I don't know how true that necessarily could be, but what?
I think probably so, because she was on TV, she was big, but, she was very brassy and loud, but not on stage. I mean, she did, she did, of course, Bosom Buddies, but, she, Three Penny Opera, she was a very mellow, she was the wife, the mother,
Well, for all we know, she could have been a very... I mean, she was married to Gene Sachs, the director, for a bunch of years.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a loss. I mean, obviously, she was old. I wish she hadn't died of cancer. I wish it had been natural causes.
The one thing I do wish is I wish her one-woman show
had been better.
Ago. Yeah.
Well, she was following Elaine Stritch.
Yeah.
Stritch did that major Broadway show about 10 years ago at Liberty. It was directed by George C. Wolfe, and it was a revelation. She was so marvelous, and the story she told was so personal and so well done, and then the musical numbers interspersed. So V. Arthur came along and tried to do something sort of similar, but more of a light cabaret fair thing. Do some numbers, tell some jokes, tell some not very interesting, generic sort of showbiz stories,
yeah.
and figure that she'd get the same response because she was Bea Arthur, and people were very polite, but it just was, it was, eh, it was a very blah,
yeah.
And you know, people came to worship, and that's the shame.
Because
we were ready to love her to death.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And when we came away saying, oh, well, it was great to see Bea Arthur, but why didn't they push her? Why
right.
didn't she do right. something, you know? Why didn't she tell the real? Come on, she worked with Zero Mostel. She worked with Norman Lear, the
tell
Golden
story.
Girl. She did these things, and, you know.
And she brings the piano player.
She what? What was her?
She brought the piano player.
She brought the piano, yeah, Whoopi Doopi. So, Whoopi Doopi. It must be getting late. I'm using phrases like whoopee doopee. Well, whoopee doopee, we've got to push Performing Arts Insider Theater Magazine, and then I'll be back to talk a little bit about my trip to California, a theatrical trip, to round out this edition of Inside Broadway on Dave's Gone By, so don't go away. They say the neon lights are bright on Broadway, and you can see them shine off Broadway too. And if you love the theater scene, you need this special magazine. Performing Arts Insider is for you. Everything you want to know about theater, cabaret, opera, and dance, 516-295-1511. 516-295-1511 or performingartsinsider.com. PerformingArtsInsider.com, the place to find out about this wonderful hard copy magazine that's been around for 65 years and counting. Well, I have a little bit of time. I know people might be waiting for the gospel show. They're running a little late, but they'll be here in a few minutes.
Mm-hmm.
They'll be here. So, want to tell you just a bit about my trip to Los Angeles on your tax dollar. Thank you very much. But you know what? It's money well spent, considering what this government has done to bail out places like AIG and your local, you know, conniving, thieving savings bank. The money that they gave to the National Endowment for the Arts in order to improve the state or move forward or change the state of arts journalism in America, I think is pretty sensational. What they did was they flew 23 arts journalists, theater critics, music
critics.
They,
all these people were paid for by the federal government?
Yeah. Through the NEA, and also through partially funded by USC, University of Southern California.
Who else went? Name names.
Name names? Oh, gosh, don't put me on the spot. You might not have heard of the people that I was with, but people like Chris Klimek, pardon me for mispronouncing, Alan Sherstuhl, Kelly Daly. I mean, these are people, writers all around the country, not just from New York.
Right, right.
And they write about the arts, and some of them are theater critics, some of them are music critics, or movie critics, too, and media
mm-hmm.
people. And flew us all out, sort of like the Eugene O'Neill Theater Center at first, where it's just going to be, you're going to go, and they're going to tell you how to write a little better, and improve your style, and maybe, you know, cut some things out of the first paragraph and make sure you're not using any BS. Just tell the truth and give more examples. And so you get those kinds of workshops. But it was so much more, because it came at this pivotal juncture in arts journalism in America right now, because newspaper after newspaper has been folding. I mean, we might lose the Boston Globe.
Isn't that amazing?
This week. I mean, we might lose the New York Times, too, sometime, but at
yeah.
least for now, the New York Times is sticking around and going to kill the Boston Globe, so the New York Times can stick around. But, I mean, the Seattle Post-Intelligencer, I think, went out. I mean, just every day we would have a roll call, and we'd do, like, a death knell for another newspaper.
Newsday is still here.
Newsday is still here. And they're not dumping their excess circulation in the river anymore, so now we know exactly how many issues they're selling. And the whole paradigm really has changed. I mean, it's not as if it's news that the Internet has changed everything, but for some reason, even though all the newspapers got on the bandwagon and made sure that they had websites and made sure that people could go to the websites and go to other places and buy subscriptions and buy, you know, there was some kind of capitalist model there. They never figured it out. And they still never figured out what happened, and what was really explained to us is the reason all the newspapers are going is not that people aren't reading newspapers anymore or not buying newspapers at the newsstand. It's simply that all the newspapers are owned by a few companies that aren't even local anymore. And they're just paying debt. These companies buy newspapers for billions of dollars that they can't pay back. And that's why it isn't that the newspapers are failing so badly or that nobody's advertising. It's the fact that everything is about debt restructuring. There isn't just this little local newspaper anymore. Oh, I see the gospel folks are here. I'm gonna table that thought because it's 12:29 a.m. here on this Monday morning. So Next week I will tell you more, or it might be the week after, depending on when I get back here, but tell you more about this whole NEA trip, because I get fired up about it, and I'd love to also take some comments of yours as well. But let me just thank the National Endowment for the Arts and USC and the wonderful folks there, like Sasha Anawalt, who runs the program, and her assistant, Ariana Sikorsky, and all the mentors, and all the... You know what? I'll just tell you, it's wonderful now, and I'll get into more specifics next time. Let's get out of Inside Broadway, and then we'll wrap up the show real quick and finish off Dave's Gone By. We've just been Inside Broadway, thanks to TotalTheater.com and Performing Arts Insider. When is Shalom Damagon? When is Shalom Damagon? That's all I ever hear. When is my TV show Shalom Damagon? Well, go to ShalomDammit.com for all the days, all the times, all the channels. It's all there. ShalomDammit.com. Now you know. Please go. Sponsor me. Dave's Gone By. Run your ad. Folks will buy. If you want to reach the public, sponsor me. Advertise on this program for incredibly reasonable rates with long-term discounts. See prices at davesgoneby.org or call 516-295-1511. Sponsor me. If you're wise on Dave's Gone By, you'll advertise. If you want to be successful, sponsor me.
Dave's Gone By.
It goes so fast, even when we have extra time. I can't believe it's 12:30 already. It just zoomed by. I want to do some thank yous, first of all. Thank you so much to Uta Lemper. Please get her new album and go see her in June at La Poisson Rouge. For more information, go to utalemper.com. I want to thank also Janet Appel for arranging that interview. I mean, it went really great, so thank you so, so much. I want to thank also Joey Reynolds for having me on his radio show again just a night or so ago. I may play a little piece of that if I get a chance on an upcoming Dave's Gone By. For more information about this program, please go to davesgoneby.org, where you can see pictures and the history of the show and also listen to our archives for free at any time. Let's zoom through our sponsors. Jeff, help me out on this. There's the Woodrow Delicatessen in the Peninsula Shopping Center of Hewlett. Kosher, open 7 days. Mwah. That's what I can sum up everything to say about the Woodrow Deli in just mwah.
And leave off the last W for...
Wonderful food. The Hewlett Minuteman Press, the copy kings of Broadway.
10% off to Dave's Gone By listeners.
Just go into Hewlett Minuteman Press and tell them you listen to this show, and no matter any job bigger, if it's a 10-cent job, you get a penny back. If it's a $100 job, you get whatever...
$10.
Thank you. Math was never my thing. Hewlett Minuteman Press on Broadway in Hewlett. Next to what was the new Lohman Shoe Store, what is now empty, and what may be the new Max and Gino's. I don't even know. Fancy Schmancy Balloons for all your party decorating needs. What's that phone number, Jeff Goodman?
516-797-3229.
797-3229. Make your party look amazing with balloon archways and centerpieces, everything you need to make your
and
party
all the
look
foam board theme pieces.
Foam board theme. If you know what that means you're probably planning a bar mitzvah, a graduation, or a christening. So give Jeff a call at 516-797-3229. And check out Performing Arts Insider Theater Magazine. PerformingArtsInsider.com has all that information.
The Bible of Broadway.
So, I want to tell you a couple of other very, very quick things. First of all, this week, Stage Buggy Talk starts Tuesday night, 7 o'clock, at the Players Theater on McDougal Street in the Village. I'm hosting that, and Melba Moore is going to be our special guest on the first show.
Melba Moore,
another singing actress of great stature. Plus, Bill German, the guy who wrote that book on the Rolling Stones that we had a couple of weeks ago, he'll be there too. A couple of other guests.
You tell Melba Moore I paid to see Innocent Black years ago. I want my money back.
You paid to see what?
A show she did called Innocent Black. I took my father. We were in the city, and I was all excited. It was the first preview performance. I said, oh, let's go see Melba Moore do a show.
Yeah.
It was terrible.
Oh, dear. Well, I may not bring that up. when I see her. But everybody, come see me and Melba Moore this Tuesday night, 7 o'clock at the Players Theater on McDougal Street. Go to StageBuddy.com to find out
more. Back.
And also, check out Shalom Dammit on YouTube. You can watch all the episodes. And also, it's still on Cablevision Friday afternoons, 3 o'clock and 3:30 on Channel 115.
It's very funny.
Shalom Dammit. Happy Mother's Day next Sunday. Also, keep your dial tuned here Sunday, June 7th. That's going to be our Tony special. The Tonys are later on that night on Channel 2 on WGBB 5 to 7. I will be hosting, I think, our fourth annual, maybe fifth annual, WGBB Tony Award special. Do not miss it. Thank you to my beloved and adorable and wonderful wife, Joyce. 2 more weeks to go before her semester's over. Yay. And I get her back home with me. And thanks so much to my mom and dad. Well, time to leave the neighborhood, but we'll be back very soon for the 310th episode of Dave's Gone By. Until then, don't miss your days going by. This is Dave Lefkowitz. Wishing you good night. I want to say also happy Cuatro de Mayo. See, we were a little early for Cinco de Mayo, but tomorrow, today's Cuatro, so happy going out.
And also, this is Jeff Goodman, too. You forgot totally about
that. Oh, wait, I took that out when you were on vacation. I got to put that back in my script. This is Dave Lefkowitz and
Jeff Goodman.
Wishing you good night and
gone by.
Listen to the wind and listen to the sea, the thunder and storms, the rays of light, the silence when it forms, like music at night, like music at night, like music at night. I always wanna be here.